Three grieving women sit in a circle, clutching tissues and photos, whispering about loss, loneliness, and love cut short. Their support group, informally dubbed the Widowmakers Club, was never supposed to be more than a place for healing, but grief has a way of bending morality. When the conversation turned to life insurance, shared pain became shared purpose. Why not form a silent alliance, pool their payouts, and build a safety net from the ashes of their dead husbands? But here's the twist. One of them is lying. Her husband isn't dead. He's very much alive, locked in their upscale condo, drugged and disoriented, while she claims to mourn him. She doesn't want comfort. She wants access to their trust, to the club's fund, to secrets worth millions. And the moment she's in, things start to unravel. Questions get whispered. Suspicion thickens like perfume. And soon, a body really does turn up. But it's not who anyone expects. What happens when a club built on death finds out one of them faked it all? So, if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1. The grief that binds Diane swore she didn't cry anymore. She wore black, but hated mourning. Still, she showed up every Thursday at the St. Agnes Community Centre, room 204, grief recovery, spouses only. They didn't talk about healing. They talked about surviving. And sometimes, surviving meant scheming. It was Diane who first introduced the idea. She had lost her husband 2 years ago in a sudden cardiac arrest. No warning, no goodbye, just a man crumpled over eggs and toast. "I got $800,000 from Mutual Life," she confessed one afternoon. There was silence, then a nod, then curiosity. Cheryl was next. Her husband had driven off a highway in a storm, $450,000 from a double indemnity clause, and Linda, the quiet one, said hers was a suicide. Pills. Insurance payout. $300,000, though she'd never touched a dime. "Too much guilt," she'd said, staring at the beige carpet. Grief was their entry fee. The payout was their glue. It was Linda, trembling, who first proposed, "What if we pooled it? Just a portion, for each other, in case one of us ends up broke? Or worse?" No one answered right away. But Diane tilted her head. "Like a trust," she said. "A widow's trust." Cheryl sipped her herbal tea. "Or a pact." And that's how the Widowmakers Club was born. Tess watched from the window the first time she arrived. She had done her research. Diane, former hospice nurse, known to the insurance reps. Cheryl, mid-level pharmaceutical executive, divorced once before her late husband. Linda, enigmatic, artistic, and just unstable enough to be useful. Tess didn't belong. Her husband, George, wasn't dead. He was comatose from a stroke she had induced by swapping his blood pressure meds for diuretics. Tess wasn't a sociopath. She was desperate. George was sitting on over $2.4 million in a joint brokerage account, and Tess had no legal access while he lived. She didn't want him dead, just legally gone. And joining a group of grief-fatigued, insurance-rich women seemed like the fastest way to learn how to fake the aftermath. Tess forged the death certificate, an old trick she picked up from her former life in hospital billing, named the cause ventricular aneurysm. She even created a cremation certificate and tossed in an urn filled with fireplace ash. When she walked in, they didn't suspect a thing. She wore a modest black dress, didn't cry too hard, and when they circled up, she said, "George passed in May. Aneurysm. In his sleep." It was vague and sad enough to pass. Linda held her hand. Diane gave her a folder. Inside were three names and a bank account routing number. Over wine, one night at Diane's place, the tone shifted. The women were giddy. tipsy, maybe on the edge of rebellion. "This isn't just grief anymore," Cheryl said. "This is reclaiming power." They clinked glasses. Widowhood, they agreed, wasn't just a burden. It was leverage. "Imagine," Diane whispered, "we turn this into something bigger, an alliance. Think of the millions we could protect by keeping it in our hands." Tess nodded. "So we're financial vigilantes now?" Linda, a little high, giggled. "More like grief witches." But it wasn't all wine and warm embraces. The questions came slowly. "Where's George buried?" Cheryl asked. "No funeral photos," Diane added casually one evening. Linda, who said almost nothing, began sketching a portrait of George from memory. "Just to honour him," she said, "you described him so well." And that's when Tess knew the walls were closing in, because the sketch looked exactly like him. The day Diane followed Tess home, everything changed. She didn't confront her, just watched from the parking lot as a man in a bathrobe stood in the window, blinking against the light, pale, alive. Diane didn't tell the others, not yet. She waited, she watched, and then she set the trap. "Let's take the Trust International," she suggested one night. "Move some funds to a Cayman Shell account. I have a contact, but I need your signatures." Tess hesitated. "What about wire fraud?" Diane grinned. "You're worried now?" Tess signed. And that's when the real con began. Not against George, not against the group, but against her. Chapter 2. The Club Strikes Back. Tess didn't notice the first $20,000 go missing. She was distracted. George had a seizure, and the at-home nurse called twice in one night. By the time she reviewed the accounts, 20 Ks from the pooled fund had vanished. Marked consulting, she asked Diane. "Legal retainer," Diane said smoothly. "We're protecting the trust." Then another $10,000 disappeared. "Investments," Cheryl said. Tess was losing control, and that's when Linda sent the text. "He's not dead, is he?" Tess ran. She cleaned out her joint account, left George in a hospital, and checked into a mid-range motel three towns over. But it was too late. The next morning, her face was on a private investigator's Facebook page, tagged as "Fraud Widow, Wanted by Partners." Cheryl had contacts in media. Diane had contacts in law enforcement. And Linda? Linda had slipped a GPS tracker into her purse three nights before. When they found Tess, she was on a bus heading toward Canada, using her sister's passport. She had planned the escape, down to the burner phone and prepaid card. But she didn't count on Linda being the wild card. Linda met her at the border, holding flowers. "You forgot our grief circle," she whispered. Tess ran. Straight into the arms of two RCMP officers. 3 months later, the court case made headlines. Fake widow tried to steal trust, meant for grieving women. Tess pled no contest to wire fraud, identity theft, and elder abuse. But here's the part no one saw coming. Tess wasn't the only one lying. Linda's husband, still alive, in Portugal. They'd faked his suicide years ago. Cheryl's payout came from her second husband's staged accident. The man now lived in Belize under a new name. And Diane? She was a nurse, but not a widow. She had euthanized her dying husband, legally, then collected on three separate policies. So what was the Widowmakers Club, really? A trust fund? A grief circle? Or a cabal of women who weaponized sorrow, turned it into currency, and protected their secret with surgical precision? Only one thing is clear. Tess picked the wrong club to con, because while she played pretend, they played for keeps. And the next time a new widow walks into room 204, the circle will close again, with smiles, wine, and just a hint of menace behind every condolence.